welcome to Tuned To Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There's crime in this hour. Later on, an episode of Casey Crime Photographer from 1947. But first, it's 21st Precinct, with the second surviving broadcast of the series from September 15th, 1953.
First Precinct, Sergeant Klein. Well, who got bitten? Owl? Four. Where's the dog?
You are in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
All right. You just wait right there in the emergency room. Yes, right there. I'll have an officer come over. Yes. Right away.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
21st Precinct. 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. It was 3:55 p.m. when I came into the precinct house for my night tour, which would keep me on the job until 8 the following morning. As I signed the blotter, Sergeant Burns, who was filling in as desk officer, told me that acting superintendent of buildings of the department was in the house making a routine inspection. After I turned out the platoon, I went upstairs and found the acting superintendent of buildings on the third floor. I called his attention to the cracked plaster in the hall ceiling on that floor and to the fact that during the last winter, the radiators failed to heat the floor comfortably. On the way down, I showed him the worn condition of the stairs from the second floor to the back room, and as we came out into the muster room, I told him about the plumbing difficulties in the cells.
Well, thanks, Captain.
Do you have any idea when these repairs will be made?
Well, there's a lot of work to do, Captain. There's nearly 100 buildings in the department, and most of them need work, lots of work.
Oh, yes, I understand that, but some need attention sooner than others, don't you think?
Oh, yes, yes, some do. That's why I'm making the inspection.
Well, this muster room, for instance, it hasn't been painted since 1941. Did you realize that?
Captain, you know I'd like to do everything, and I'd like to do it right away, but there's been only so much money appropriated. Well, it's been a pleasure, Captain. Sign the blotter and get on my way. A little bit behind schedule. I still have to visit the 23rd this afternoon.
Where were you?
Oh, Mr. Balney wants to sign the blotter, Sergeant Burns. Step on around the back of the desk, Mr. Balney.
Right over here, Mr. Balney.
Well, thank you, Captain.
That one's got whiskers. I used to use it myself. Ringing on time.
What's doing, Sergeant?
Oh, nothing much, Captain. Except that young fellow over there is waiting to see you.
Who is he, do you know?
He says his name is Weald, Harold Weald. Said it was personal. I told him you were busy. He said he'd wait. He wouldn't tell either me or Sergeant Burns what was on his mind. Excuse me, Captain.
Yeah, go ahead.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein.
Well, thanks for all your courtesies, Captain. I'll try to get something done, I promise you that.
Oh, you what, ma'am?
Absolutely necessary, Mr. Balney, that we get sufficient heat up on the third floor. No one can work
up there. Listen, madam.
Well, it's a long time until winter.
Please,
Captain.
Madam.
Yes, it was a long time since last winter, too. That's when I reported.
Madam, you have my word, Captain. There'll be someone here within 2 weeks.
All right. That's a civil action, madam. If he owes you money, we can't collect it. You better see your lawyer.
Oh, I'll talk to that fellow that's waiting, Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
If you can't afford a lawyer, go to the Legal Aid Society.
Mr. Weald?
Yes, that's right. Captain Connolly?
Kennelly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, listen, Captain, I'm sorry to bother you, but I got an awful problem. It's my kid.
Well, what's the trouble?
Well, she got bit by a dog.
When was this?
Friday morning.
Where?
In the playground there, you know, 62nd Street, York Avenue.
Uh-huh. How old is she?
Four. She's four.
Excuse me, Captain.
Yes?
Division captain is calling in for you.
Oh, all right. Thanks, Sergeant. I'll take it in my office.
Yes, sir.
Come in, Mr. Weald.
Yeah, thanks. My mother takes her to the playground almost every day.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Have a seat there.
I didn't think there was anything to it.
Excuse me a minute.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Captain Kennelly. Hello, Denny. Oh, just fine. When? Well, just a second. Let me look my chart. Yeah. Yeah, I'm working Monday. Where? All right, I'll be there. Okay, so long. How'd you happen to get bitten, Mr. Weald?
Well, I wasn't there personally. I was working.
Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Me, I'm a driver for the Ace Taxis. I should be on the job now, but I thought I'd better take off the afternoon and get this straightened out.
Yeah. How bad was the bite?
Well, bad enough, I guess. He got her in the thigh, you know. He really dug in. Well,
did she get medical treatment?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My wife said the lady with the dog was very nice. Janet, that's my wife, she got kind of excited at first, but doctor fixed it up, said nothing serious. So I forgot the whole thing, you know, until I got a call from my wife this afternoon.
Uh-huh. What happened then?
Well, my wife was all excited. She called my dispatcher, left word for me to call her. When I did, she said somebody had been around from the Board of Health. Told her they couldn't get hold of the lady with the dog, and if they didn't by tomorrow morning, she'd have to bring the kid down for rabies shots. There's 22 shots. It takes 22 days.
Well, where does the woman with the dog live? In this precinct?
Well, I don't know whether it's in this precinct. It's Mrs. Charles Whitney, 190 Sutton Place North.
That's in this precinct, yes.
So I took a walk over there before. It's a big apartment house, very expensive. I started to go in. The doorman asked me who I wanted, so I told him the whole story. Mm-hmm. He buzzed up to the apartment. There wasn't any answer. He told me a policeman had been around two or three times today and the day before. The policeman couldn't find anybody there either. Is he from here, that policeman?
Yes, that's right. In dog bite cases, there's a 480V notice to be served on the owner.
Mm-hmm.
A notice to deliver the dog to the ASPCA for observation.
Well, anyway, I got to talking to the doorman, and he said he thought sure somebody was home because the elevator man heard the dog barking in the apartment when he went up there on the floor for something else this afternoon.
Oh, is that so?
Well, I'm only going by what the doorman said, the elevator man said. Now, look, the lady was very nice, but I don't want my kid to go through any 22 shots. What's more important, a dog or a kid?
What do you think, Mr. Weald?
Well, I know what I think. The important thing is what you think. That Mrs. Whitney, her husband, is a big-shot judge, the doorman told me.
You sit here, Mr. Weald.
Well, I'll sit here, but is that going to get me action? That's what I want, action.
That's what you're going to get. I'll be right back. Sergeant Burns.
Yes, Captain?
What are you doing about a 480V on a dog bite case?
All right.
Is that this one on Sutton Place North, Captain?
Yes, that's the one. What are you doing about it?
Well, it's still hanging, Captain. Lieutenant Snyder said he had a man go by there three times during the day tour. There's nobody home.
Well, did they go upstairs and see?
I don't know about that, Captain. He just said it was still hanging. They haven't been able to serve it.
I gave it to Singleton and told him to try as soon as he got over there.
You know who that is? That's Judge Charles Whitney.
Yes, I know. Now, listen, the father of the child the dog bit is in my office. He's been told to bring the child down to start a series of 22 rabies injections beginning tomorrow morning, unless that dog is delivered today.
There doesn't seem to be anybody home, Captain.
Well, the father says the doorman told him there was somebody home. Now get on it.
Yes, sir.
I went back into my office and told Mr. Weald, the father of the dog bite victim, that we would make a further effort to serve the 480V notice on the owner of the dog. I advised him to return to his home and promised that we would notify him later concerning any results we obtained. Patrolman Singleton rang in and reported that he again went to 190 Sutton Place North and attempted to reach the occupants of the Whitney apartment by the house phone. There was no answer. He left a copy of the notice with the doorman. He was instructed to go upstairs and knock on the door. In the meantime, I read and signed such reports as had accumulated since I was last on duty and placed them in the box to be sent by messenger to division headquarters. At 5:10, I went back out into the muster room and walked over to the desk.
He's trying to reach the judge at his office, Captain.
Good. Sergeant Klein, did Singleton ring in again?
No, sir, not yet.
Judge Charles Winley's office, please. I thought this may be the quickest way to get some information, Captain.
Well, it might be, yes.
Hello? This is Sergeant Burns at the 21st Precinct. Is Judge Whitney there, please? Oh, is he? Oh, I see. Well, when? Well, thank you very much. Oh, did Mrs. Whitney go with him? Uh-huh. Yes, I see. Well, thank you very much. He's out of town, Captain.
Yeah?
He went to Boston for the American Bar Association convention. Secretary expects him back tonight. He's flying in.
Did Mrs. Whitney go with him?
No, sir, not that his secretary knows of. As far as his secretary knows, Mrs. Whitney's at home.
I see. Look up the telephone number of their apartment and call over there.
Yes, sir.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein.
Their phone might not be listed, though.
Yes, Singleton. What'd you find out?
Is that Singleton, Sergeant?
Hold on. Yes, sir, it's Singleton.
All right, let me talk to him.
Take it right there, Captain. Hold on, Singleton.
This is Captain Kennelly.
Yes, sir.
Did you serve that notice?
No, sir.
Well, did you go up to the floor?
Yes, sir.
What happened?
Well, I knocked on the door, Captain. There wasn't any answer. Then I heard that dog bark inside. I knocked again. Finally, she came and talked to me through the door.
Who came?
Mrs. Whitney, Captain.
Well, wouldn't she open the door?
No, sir. I told her I had the notice to serve on her to deliver the dog for observation. She said she wouldn't give up the dog. She wouldn't open the door.
Did you explain to her that the Department of Health just has to examine the dog, that they won't molest or mistreat the animal?
Yes, sir, but she refused to open the door.
Where are you calling from now?
The lobby of the apartment building.
All right. You stay there. I'll be right over.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
Put out a call for a car to come by the house for me.
Yes, sir, Captain.
She's there, huh, Captain?
She's there, yes. So's the dog. She wouldn't open the door.
C.B., this
well, did she say why she wouldn't, precinct. Captain?
No, that's what I'm going over to find out.
What if she still refuses?
Okay.
You get a warrant to go in and get the dog.
That won't look very nice. Cops break down judge's door. Some headline.
Is this better? 4-year-old girl takes 22 anti-rabies injections. No headline.
You are listening to 21st Precinct, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city.
When you apply...
And now back to 21st Precinct and Captain Frank Kennelly.
The disease of rabies is almost extinct. This is due almost entirely to the cooperation between police and public health authorities and the strict enforcement of the laws relating to dog bite cases. These laws call for the compulsory observation of dogs and other animals who are carriers of the disease after they have bitten, and for compulsory treatment of human victims bitten by an animal that has escaped. The fact that the disease is now rare does not lessen the strictness of enforcement. The idea is to keep it rare. At 5.05 p.m., the car came by the station house and drove me to 190 Sutton Place North, a new apartment building in the high rent classification. As we drove up, I saw Patrolman Singleton on the sidewalk in front of the building. The man was standing there talking with him. All right, wait for me here.
Hello, Captain.
Singleton?
Captain, this is Mr. Tedburn. He's the super of the building.
The resident manager.
Mr. Tedburn?
How do you do?
You've been waiting down here since you rang in, Singleton?
Yes, sir.
I really don't see what's all the excitement, Captain.
Don't you?
The Whitneys are respectable people. He's an important judge. To have policemen running through the halls over something like this, it's ridiculous.
Mr. Tedburn, I've just been talking to the father of the girl who was bitten by that dog. If that dog isn't delivered for observation, that 4-year-old girl will have to start a series of 22 injections. Is that ridiculous?
Well, I just want to save embarrassment, is all.
There's no embarrassment on our account. If she'd accept service of the notice, everything would be very quiet and simple. What kind of dog is it, Singleton?
Well, the doorman told me a boxer, Captain.
That is right, a boxer.
Oh, big fellow, hmm?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go up.
Yes, sir.
Do you mind if I come along also?
I'd be glad to have you, Mr. Tedburn. You can see that we don't embarrass anyone. The doorman held the door open for us, and we walked into the foyer of the building. It was decorated in black and white. On the elevator, Singleton directed the operator to take us to the 14th floor. When we got off, Mr. Tedburn led the way to apartment 14B. No one was in the hall. Either the neighbors on the floor didn't know what was going on, or they didn't care.
This is it.
Shall I ring, Captain?
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. There it is.
Try again.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Whitney? We're police officers. We want to talk to you.
It is a wonder the neighbors haven't complained about that dog. He certainly does raise the roof, doesn't he?
Mrs. Whitney!
You know, Captain, I'm beginning to more and more see this thing from your point of view.
Are you?
Under these circumstances, I think I have a right to use my passkey.
shut on the door, Jim.
Quiet.
Mrs. Whitney, please.
Go away. Close the door. Please.
I want to talk to you, Mrs. Whitney.
You can't take him. I won't let you.
Well, I'm not going to take him. I want to talk to you, that's
quiet,
all.
Yes, quiet. Now, come on.
Where is she going?
I don't know. Well, she's coming back. She wants to put the dog in the other room.
I want you to shut the door and let me alone.
You don't seem to understand the seriousness of this, Mrs. Whitney.
You want to take Jeff away?
I don't want to take him away.
He's all we've got. Jeff's all we've got. We have no family. Just Jeff, that's all.
I'm not going to take him away. I just have to give you this notice. Singleton.
Oh, yes, sir. Here it is.
I want you to take this, Mrs. Whitney.
No, I won't.
It's a notice to deliver your dog to the ASPCA by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Well, I'll take it, but I won't deliver him. I won't. You can't have him. He's the only thing I've got left. The only thing.
All right. Let's shut the door. Thank you, Mrs. Whitney.
I won't.
Do you think she will bring that dog down there?
I don't. She's been served with a notice. Okay, Singleton, get back on the job.
Yes, sir.
People can live in a building 20 years and you never know they ever existed. 20 years.
Hit that elevator bell, will you, Singleton?
Yes, sir.
Then a little thing like this can cause so much trouble.
Well, it's always the little things that cause trouble, Mr. Tedburn. People seem to manage the big ones. We rode down in the elevator. I thanked Mr. Tedburn for his assistance and came out of the building with Singleton. He resumed walking his post and I got into the car and went back to the precinct house. There, as the officer who served the 480V form on Mrs. Whitney, I filled in the lower half and delivered it to the desk officer to be forwarded to the Bureau of Preventable Diseases, Department of Health. Sergeant Burns told me that Patrolman Mercado had come upon a boy, 17, in the act of turning in a false alarm. He chased him up the stairs of a tenement and over the roofs of three adjacent buildings before he was apprehended. The boy admitted turning in at least 5 false alarms during the last month. I went on patrol of the precinct, during which I stopped on post number 2, saw Patrolman Mercado, and congratulated him on the arrest. Later, while I was still on patrol, there was a radio signal to call in. We stopped at the nearest box, and I was told by Sergeant Klein that a visitor was waiting for me, Judge Charles Whitney. I had my operator drive me around to the precinct house. When I got out of the car, I instructed him to pick up his partner, who had been taking his meal period, and resume patrol. As the car drove away, I crossed the sidewalk and walked up into the muster room. Hello, Sergeant.
Captain.
21st precinct, Sergeant.
Where's the judge?
I suggested the judge wait in your office, Captain.
Take him in. Good. All right.
Oh, what's doing, Sergeant?
Oh, it's been a quiet tour, Captain.
All right, I'll be in my office.
Yes, sir.
21st precinct, Sergeant Klein. Broke into what?
Judge Whitney.
Oh, hello, Captain. We've met before, haven't we?
Yes, I think so, at some dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sit down, Judge.
Thank you.
I just got into LaGuardia from Boston an hour ago.
Yes, sir, I know.
I understand you were over to the apartment, Captain.
Yes, that's right. We were there. And I'm sorry if we found it necessary to be a little insistent with Mrs. Whitney, but I don't have to tell you the law in these dog bite cases, Judge. If I wasn't able to effect service the way I did, I would have been required to get a warrant and break the door down. I hope you were able to explain that to Mrs. Whitney.
Captain, I haven't been able to explain anything to Mrs. Whitney. She wouldn't open the door for me either.
Wouldn't she?
No. I came home from the airport and went upstairs and tried my key. She had the chain on the door. Wouldn't open it. Wouldn't even talk to me. Building manager came upstairs and told me what had happened.
Well, I'm sorry, Judge.
Well, it's not your fault, Captain. I don't blame you. I should have seen it coming. Perhaps I even knew it was coming, and I couldn't bring myself to believe it.
What's that, sir?
A breakdown. I should have seen it the night I left for Boston. It was the same night that Jeff bit the child.
Oh?
He's a boxer, you know, so we named him James J. Jeffries, Jeff for short.
Mm-hmm.
I told her before I left that she would probably be called upon to deliver the dog for observation. And I should have seen from my attitude then that this was going to happen. I was in a hurry to catch the plane. She was all right until then. I understand she was fine when the dog bit the child, that she took the mother and the child to the emergency room, paid the bill, so forth.
Yes, that's the report we got, too.
But the minute I mentioned the possibility she might have to turn Jeff over for observation, she changed.
What was the reason for the change, you know, Judge?
Yes, I do. I think I do. See, Captain, we had two sons, Richard and Charles Jr. They were a year and a half apart, 19 and 20. They were in school at Yale. Last June, they were driving down to New York after school. Their car turned over on the Merritt Parkway. They were both killed. Both of them.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Judge.
If you have children of your own, you can imagine what it did to us. We went away, but that didn't help. Nothing helped. For myself, I found escape in my work. A judge can work hard, you know, and I did. But Nora didn't have anything like work, I suppose she... She turned to the dog, because Jeff was the boy's dog. When she saw the possibility that she'd lose the dog, that brought it on. I'm sure that that's the answer.
Well, it probably is, yes, sir.
Wouldn't even open the door. She doesn't even trust me.
If I'd have known what the circumstances were, perhaps we could have used some other means.
There wasn't any way for you to know, Captain. I'm not worried about that now. She's locked up in there alone. That's what I'm worried about. I don't know what's preying on her mind.
Well, if you want to go into the apartment, Judge, I can call the emergency squad to give us a hand. They have a way with doors,
yes,
you know.
But that's only as a last resort. No, I'd like to try persuasion some more. I had the door open this wide, the same as you did. I called to her. She wouldn't answer. I couldn't think of anything else to say or do. I came over here. Well, do you have any ideas, Captain, besides the emergency squad, I mean?
Well, perhaps I have one, just one. It might work, I don't know.
Anything, Captain. I'm willing to try anything.
Judge Whitney was a forlorn-looking man as I left him sitting in my office and walked out into the muster room. I gave Sergeant Klein instructions to have a car drive around to the precinct house to pick us up. Also, I told him to have sector car number one go to the home of Harold Weald, the father of the dog bite victim. They were instructed to locate Mr. Weald and ask if he would accompany them to 190 Sutton Place North. The car came by to drive Judge Whitney and myself to his apartment house. We rode the elevator to the 14th floor in silence.
Yeah, this way, Captain.
Yes, I know.
Oh, of course you do.
I'd suggest you try your key again, Judge.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Still on the chain.
Nora. Nora. Why don't you try calling the dog? If he comes to the door, maybe she will, too.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Jeff, boy. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jeff. Come on, Jeff.
Usually comes when I call him, Captain.
Well, I think she has him in the back with the door closed. That's where she had him before.
Nora. Please, please come to the door, Nora. Please. Nora.
Nothing be any use,
Captain. Well, let me try.
Mrs. Whitney. Mrs. Whitney.
Now that way to your right.
One of your men, Captain.
Oh, yes.
It was a little while to locate him, Captain.
Hello, Captain.
Judge Whitney, Mr. Weald.
Hi.
How do you do?
Judge, Patrolman Singleton.
How do you do?
Pleased to know you, sir. He told me about all the trouble you've been having, Judge. I don't like to cause any trouble, but after all, my little girl...
I think it's the other way around as far as trouble being caused is concerned, Mr. Weald. Now, don't worry about that. Well, I think you better call the emergency squad, Captain. This isn't going to do any good.
Try again, Judge. Once more.
All right. Nora. Nora, please come to the door, Nora. Nora.
I think she's coming.
She is.
Please, close the door, Charles.
Let me in, Nora. You've got to.
Close the door and go away,
sweetheart,
Charles.
Sweetheart, now, please.
I'm not going to let you in. You're part of the law, too. You're on their side.
Mrs. Whitney.
Close the door, please.
This is Mr. Weald. He's the father of the little girl.
Oh, how is she?
She's all right, I think, ma'am.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. Jeff never bitten anyone before. I think it was an accident. I think he was just trying to get that red ball she was playing with. Just the red ball. He's a very good dog, really.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you sure she's all right?
We hope she'll be all right. She has to take 22 injections.
22 injections? Why?
Because we can't get Jeff to see that he doesn't have rabies.
Oh, Jeff doesn't have rabies. You know he doesn't.
We have to make sure, ma'am. That's the law.
I don't want to hear about the law. That's all I ever hear about.
You don't want that little four-year-old girl to go through 22 injections, do you, Mrs. Whitney?
Oh, no. That'd be a shame.
Well, it's up to you.
It's not up to me. Jeff doesn't have rabies. Anybody can see that. Anybody.
When were you told to bring your little girl to the Department of Health, Mr. Wheel?
Tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock.
All 22 at once?
No, ma'am. It takes 22 days.
Oh, no. Poor little girl.
Now, nothing will happen to Jeff, Mrs. Whitney. Believe me, they'll take good care of him. You'll have him back.
They'll keep him. They'll take him away from me, just like everything else. 22 injections.
That's right.
And she's such a little girl. How old is she?
4.
Yes, 4. That's right. She was crying and her leg hurt her. But those little curls with a ribbon. I remember those little curls with a ribbon. I never had a little girl. I always wanted one. Not 22 injections.
Yes, ma'am. 22.
Please close the door.
Mrs. Whitney.
Please close the door. I can't get the chain off if you don't close the door.
Yes, ma'am.
What's she waiting for?
All right. Take it easy.
Sweetheart, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
There's a lot to be sorry about, isn't there? So much.
Thank you, Mrs. Whitney.
Nothing to thank me for. Jeff's in there in the bedroom.
I'll see that he gets where he has to go, Captain.
Good.
Young man?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am, Mrs. Whitney.
Watch her. Watch her every minute. Every minute of your life.
Yes, ma'am.
Because without her, you won't have any life.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Klein. He jumped, or he's going to jump. Where is he? On a ledge? Where is he? East 71?
And so it goes, around the clock, through the week, every what? Day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh-and-blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring, or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, a factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city, is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Kennelly.
21st Precinct, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 15th, 1953 on CBS. Leading man Everett Sloan, a familiar voice to radio listeners during its golden era, first part of the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles, and during the year of that broadcast, he was heard on episodes of Stroke of Fate, the Philip Morris Playhouse on Broadway, also the radio show Man Against the Crippler, which featured the story of polio research. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Casey Crime Photographer from February 6th, 1947, the episode called The Gray Kitten.
Crime Photographer. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey Crime Photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole. Our adventure for tonight, The Gray Kitten. On the edge of our city is lovely Greenwood Lake. Just before midnight, an automobile pulls up to one of the big bungalows along the shore, and a tall, dark man gets out. Seeming to brace himself, he goes to the door and opens it with his key. Seated before the fireplace is a large and determined-looking middle-aged woman.
Hello, Colin.
Why, Hester. This is a pleasant surprise.
Where's my sister?
Jessie left for Detroit this evening.
Detroit?
Didn't she let you know?
She certainly didn't. She phoned me this morning and said she wanted to discuss something with me. She said nothing about leaving town.
Oh, you know our Jessie. Late this afternoon, she says, Carlos, my darling, I must leave for Detroit tonight to attend to some business. So, like a good husband, I arrange her transportation and take her to the 8 o'clock train.
I knew Jessica was becoming irresponsible 6 months ago when she married you. But I didn't think she was so far gone. Why, I've been waiting here ever since 8:30. And she She didn't tell you I'd be here.
Not a word.
Oh, the woman's gone crazy.
When she phoned you this morning, what did she say she wanted to see you about?
She didn't say, but I have an idea, Carlos, that you'd been treating her badly again.
Why, my dear Hester, why don't you mind your own business?
Because I don't trust you. My sister's 50 years old. Young men of your type marry middle-aged women for just one reason, money.
I cannot hope to change your opinion, I suppose.
No. So, I'll be starting back to town.
I'll help you with the coat.
Don't bother. Carlos, how did you get all that dirt on your hands?
Dirt?
And your shoes and trouser legs are covered with it.
Oh, my car got stuck in the mud on the shortcut road. I had to push it out.
Oh. Just when will Jessica come back from Detroit?
She wasn't sure. She let me know.
I see. I suppose she went to Detroit to turn some more of her property there into cash for you to spend.
I do not know. And furthermore, I'm not interested in Jesse's money. Good night, Hester.
Good night. Oh, I nearly forgot something.
Forgot?
That cat of Jessica's had a kitten tonight.
A cat?
Daisy. I heard her meowing when I came in and found her in Jessica's room with one kitten beside her. It had just been born.
It was born at what time?
About 8:30.
In Jessica's room?
I just told you it was. Since Jessica's away, I'm taking Daisy and her kitten home with me. You wouldn't give them proper care. I put mother and child in a box in here. You see? Look at her.
A gray kitten.
All gray, except for that white streak on its head. It's just like the streak of pure white that runs through Jessica's gray hair.
Take that kitten out of here. Take it away.
Oh.
As you said, Hester, I wouldn't know how to take care of it.
Take the cat's box to my car.
No, you carry the box.
You act as though you're afraid of this cat and her kitten.
Come, I have you in your car.
Oh, very well. Be sure you let me know when you hear from Jessica.
I will let you know, Hester. I will let you know.
Logan, you're absolutely nuts. The longest game ever played in a major league was between Brooklyn and Boston in 1920. It went 26 innings.
Yeah, wait till I get my hands in the record book. I'll show you.
For goodness sakes, do you two have to make all this noise?
Wise guy.
That's your phone. Wise guy, go on.
Hello, Homicide Bureau. Captain Logan speaking.
This is Miss Hester Simmons.
Who?
Hester Simmons. I live at 347 Parkview Drive.
Yes, Miss Simmons. What can I do for you?
She gives a good address, so he gets polite.
Oh, shut up, Casey. Go ahead, Miss Simmons.
I have something very important to talk to you about.
What is it?
My sister has been missing for 3 weeks, Captain. I'm afraid she's been murdered.
Murdered, Casey?
Well, tell me about your sister, Miss Simmons.
It's too long a story to tell over the phone. Come to my house, please. Now.
All right, I'll be there in 15 minutes, Miss Simmons.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Hey, you and Miss Williams will have to excuse me, Casey.
Oh, no. That little word murder we just heard has made us curious.
Just a front page story, pal, with pictures.
Okay, come on. Your sister's husband told you that night, Miss Simmons, he just put her on the train for Detroit?
Yes, Captain. But now I have every reason to disbelieve him.
Excuse me, Miss Simmons. What is the name of your sister's husband?
Carlos Gavassos.
Go on with your story, Miss Simmons.
Well, since the night he told me that Jessica had gone to Detroit, I've heard nothing from her. She always writes me when she's away, and I became worried. So last week, I engaged a private detective agency.
I see.
And they learned that although Carlos purchased accommodations for the Detroit train that night, Jessica wasn't on the train. Nor have they been able to find any trace of her in Detroit.
Miss Simmons, you say Gervasso's hands were dirty and his shoes and trouser legs were caked with mud that night, huh?
Yes, Mr. Casey. He might have gotten in that condition from digging a grave.
Oh, Miss Simmons, you mustn't let yourself imagine such terrible things.
I despised Carlos from the day I met him. Why did he marry my sister? All she had to offer him was money. I think finally she refused to give him any more, so he got rid of her.
Well, we'll look into your sister's financial affairs, Miss Simmons. I suppose you know who handled her business.
Yes. The firm of Burdens and Lockridge.
Good. Hey, Captain, look out. Oh, my gosh, you almost stepped on that little kitten.
Oh, where did that come from?
I don't know. I guess it just wandered out of the other room. Oh, look at it. Can't be more than a few weeks old.
Yeah, that little bundle of gray fur.
And look at the funny white streak on its head, Casey. See? There's another mark on it.
Sure cute.
It's always running away from its mother. That kitten was born the night my sister disappeared.
Yeah?
Yes, I brought it home with me.
Well, I guess we'll be getting along.
Captain, if your investigation of my sister's financial affairs supports my suspicions, will you put Gabasus under arrest?
Well, that won't be sufficient basis for a murder charge, Miss Simmons, but it'll cause me to ask Mr. Gervasso some very personal questions.
That must be the house, Captain.
Yeah, this time of year, this place is a nice setup for a murder. Plenty of privacy.
And many places in those deep woods to bury a body.
Now, don't you two decide there's been a murder until there's a lot more evidence than I have now. I'll park here.
Well, you've learned that since her marriage, Mrs. Gervasso's converted a lot of her holdings into cash. And that there's no record of where that cash went to.
Even if her husband got it, Miss Williams, that doesn't prove he killed her. I wonder who that green car in the driveway belongs to. Yeah. Miss Simmons said the Gervasso's had a black one. Yeah, I can see that one in the garage. Look, I must have visitors. I mean, a visitor. Look at those footprints in the snow.
A woman's footprints.
Say, maybe the missing Mrs. Gervasso's has come home. Ring that doorbell. Let's find out. I'm doing that little thing.
Who's there?
This is a police officer.
Police?
Let us in, please.
What do you want?
I can tell you that more comfortably inside.
Just a minute.
He sounded a little nervous.
Everybody gets nervous when a cop comes unexpectedly to their door. Yeah, he's opening up.
Come in.
Thanks. Are you Carlos Gervasso's?
Yes.
I'm Captain Logan, Homicide Squad.
Homicide?
This is Miss Williams and Mr. Casey.
I have done no homicide.
This is a nice living room, Mr. Gervasso's. Where's the lady who just left it?
Lady?
Yeah, we saw her car outside and her footprints. Now, here's a highball glass with lipstick on the rim.
I see.
Well, let's see her.
Here I am. I stepped into the kitchen because I thought you might want to talk to Carlos in private. Well, introduce me.
This is Miss Vera Lavelle, an old friend.
Of yours or your wife's?
Of both. I drove out here to ask Mr. Gervasso if he'd heard anything from Jessie.
Yeah? She's a bimbo, Logan. In caps. Well, have you heard anything from your wife, Mr. Gervasso?
No. I think maybe my wife's sister has sent you to ask me about that.
You're right. And we arrived at such a nice time. Distinctive shade of lipstick you use, Miss Lavelle. Matches the lip prints Mr. Gervasso's is wearing on his chin.
So what?
This gives me the idea that your old friend was pretty sure his wife wouldn't drop in here unexpectedly.
This is ridiculous. I don't
can
think...
it, Gervasso's. When I came here, I was giving you all the benefit of a doubt. But now you're coming down to headquarters and tell me a lot of things.
Does this mean I'm under arrest?
Yes.
On what charge?
Suspicion of murder.
So they turned that guy Gervasso's loose today, huh, Casey?
Yeah. He's out of jail, Ethelbert.
And did poor Captain Logan go out on a limb when he put him in there?
Same limb you went out on, Annie. Stories you wrote after his arrest had the guy all but convicted and in the hot seat. I don't know how you talked city desk into running those things. Must have been your charm, I guess. And the DA doesn't even ask for an indictment.
Well, he should have gotten an indictment. He was able to prove that Gervasso's had gotten over $40,000 from his wife's estate. He could prove that Gervasso's and his wife quarreled because she refused to give him any more money. He could
prove everything, Annie, except the all-important fact of murder. And they've still found no trace of a body. The DA knows a trial jury wouldn't convict him.
So this Gervasso's may get away with murder. If he's committed.
Yeah, it kind of looks that way, Ethelbert, now. I don't think he's going to keep much of that 40 grand, though.
How do you mean?
Well, Anna, that Lavelle dame will get it. You know, I think she pushed Gervasso's into the murder of Jessica, and I think she'll push him into a new deal soon because she's going to want more money.
Say, look who's coming in the door now.
Huh? Who?
Casey, it's Gervasso.
Who's out with him?
There they are, Dan. Hello, Miss Williams.
Evening, Casey. We expected to find you here.
You were looking for us?
Not for you, Casey. But here's a present for you, Miss Williams.
What is it?
Tell her, then. Make it official.
Summons, lady.
Oh. Yes. I'm suing for $100,000 damages to my name and reputation.
Well, Mr. Gavassos, do you think that I have $100,000?
Miss Williams, your paper will be a joint defendant in my suit. The stories you wrote were so very unkind to me.
Look here, Gavassos. If you bring a libel suit against Miss Williams in the Morning Express, the paper and everyone on it will do everything possible to prove you really killed your wife.
No one in this world can prove I killed my wife, Mr. Casey.
Hey, what's the matter?
The cat. The gray kitten.
Gray kitten?
I must get out of here. Come on, Dad.
Right with you, boss.
Casey, what is the matter?
Don't ask me. It was sure peculiar. Hey, wait a minute. Look at you, kitty. Come here.
I guess some people are just naturally afraid of cats, Casey.
Hey, where did this kitten come from, Ethelbert?
I must have sneaked in from the street. It don't belong here.
It just sat on the floor and looked at Gavassos, and then when he saw it, he... Annie, this gray kitten has a single white mark on its forehead. Look, like the one we saw at Miss Simmons a month ago.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes, it has.
I'm going to have a talk with Miss Simmons tomorrow. You know, I'm getting a screwy hunch that this cat is bad medicine for that guy Gavassos. Miss Simmons, you say Gavassos showed fear of this kitten the night it was born.
Yes, and I've been thinking of a certain possible reason for his actions that frightens me.
What's that?
Are you familiar with the theory of reincarnation?
Oh, you mean the belief that when a person dies, his soul is born again in a new body?
Perhaps in that of an animal. My sister Jessica believed in reincarnation. Carlos is very superstitious. And he'd heard Jessica say that when she died, she'd return to life as a cat.
Huh? She said that?
Many, many times.
And that kitten was born in your sister's room about the time Gavassos may have killed her.
Yes. And this kitten has the white streak on its head that ran through Jessica's hair.
Hmm.
I, as most people, regard the strange combination of things I've mentioned as coincidence. But I think they explain Carlos' fear and prove his guilt.
Miss Simmons, I kind of think so, too. But we've got to have better proof than that for a jury. I want to borrow that kitten.
What for?
I'm going to use it to break that guy down. Play on his superstition till he cracks wide open. At least once a day, he's going to run into this cat.
He ran into it last night, and no one arranged that.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
Very funny. Take the kitten, Mr. Casey, and be good to it. Be good to it, Mr. Casey.
Your idea about using that kitten to crack Gervasos is swell, Casey.
Huh? Well... I'm glad you see the possibilities, Logan.
Every time Gavassos goes out, one of your detectives will shoo the kitten right across his path, Captain.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful, Miss Williams. Simply beautiful.
Well. For once, we bring you an idea and you don't throw ice water on it.
You two masters of detection and criminal psychology haven't given me a chance to talk yet.
Uh-oh.
Your idea is magnificent, stupendous, and colossal.
Yeah,
it might even work, except for one thing. Gavassos has disappeared.
Gavassos
disappeared?
Has...
He and that Laval dame took a powder last night, left with bag and baggage.
Well, didn't you have him watched?
I thought the DA's men were keeping an eye on him, and he thought my guys were doing the job.
Nice going.
Of course,
really.
You newspaper birds never
don't
make a mistake.
Don't you two start one of your riots now. My nerves won't take it. Please. Captain, you'll locate Gavassos and the Laval woman eventually, of course.
We'll try to, Miss Williams, but we still don't have enough evidence of murder. I've got work to do now. The two of you take that kitten and get out of here.
Okay. Where is the kitten, Casey?
Huh? Well, it was on the floor here a minute ago. See? Here, kitty. Here, kitty, cat, come here.
Not over here.
Kitty, come here.
Anyway, the door is closed. So
here, kitty.
Sound kind of silly,
Logan. It must have gone out that window.
Yeah, there it is.
It's down on the street.
It's running around that corner.
Oh, my gosh, it'll be killed or get lost and we'll never find it.
You should have been watching it, Casey. Now, like Gervasso's, the kitten is gone.
Casey, it's been a long time now since that Gervasos and his gal friend flew the coop, huh?
Over 3 months, Ethelbert, yeah.
And the cops haven't found a trace of him.
It's really a break for you and your newspaper, Miss Williams. With Gervasos gone, he can't sue you.
Well, I think that was just a shakedown, anyway.
I hope.
Yeah. And if he'd stuck around, I think we'd have gotten a confession out of him, too.
By using that kitten as your plan?
Why, sure. He was scared to death of that little thing, Ethelbert. I think seeing it here that night was the reason he lammed out of town in such a hurry. Oh, wait a minute. Here's Logan.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I hoped I'd find you here, Casey.
Yeah, well, draw up a stool, pal.
I haven't time now.
Huh?
Casey, we've located Gervasos in Vera Lavelle.
You have?
Where?
Yeah, in a town less than 100 miles from here. The guy's married again to another rich old dame.
Married again,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, under another name, of course. And he dyed his hair, grown a mustache, and is wearing glasses. The local cops only got wise to him by accident. And the Lavelle gal is living in the same town. She's changed herself over, too. They're getting ready for another killing, Casey.
You mean that literally?
Yeah. A servant who works for Gervasso's new wife overheard a conversation between Gervasso's and Lavelle. And the servant tipped off the wife, and she told the cops.
Yeah?
They instructed her to sit tight until I got there. I understand the guy is planning to take his new missus, who's really got plenty of dough, on a boat trip to South America. But she's not supposed to reach there.
Oh, what's his scheme to get rid of her?
We don't know yet, but I'm leaving for Gervasso's new hometown in an hour. Hey, you want to go along?
Do we?
Oh, pal, we're on our way.
You sure we're alone in this house, Carlos?
I sent my dear Isabel to the movies. They're quite alone here. Come into my room where you can see what I have arranged for our little trip.
I don't trust your arrangements, Carlos. I planned the last job and it went off perfectly.
Perfectly for you. You got most of the money. And you did not have to see that Jessica look at you when she died. I can still see her eyes staring into mine.
Oh, you've got no guts.
It's not a nice thing to remember. And then the gray kitten...
Can that? If I ever see you go soft again about that great kitten idea, I'm pulling out and fast.
She always said she'd be born again as a cat. And that kitten...
Stop it, I said. Sap. Now, let's get our plan straight. When your wife comes home from the movies tonight, you're going to do the job.
Yes. Tomorrow morning, an expressman will call for our trunks. She will be in one of the trunks.
Which will be shipped to New York from where the boat leaves. Then I, wearing her clothes and with her big fur scarf pulled up about my face, will take her place on the train.
When we get to New York, we claim the trunk, get rid of its contents, and disappear.
Right. Then under new names, we go to sunny California with nearly $80,000 that you've gotten out of your latest wife. which trunk are you going to use for the job?
That old-fashioned flat one.
I'll just take a look at it.
Be careful with it. Do not touch its lid.
Why?
Look closely inside the lid.
There's a thin glass tube running along the inside edge.
The tube is filled with gas. A gas so poisonous that the one who breathes it dies almost instantly. And the lid of this trunk is closed. The glass tube automatically breaks. And whoever is inside...
Why such a fancy layout? All you have to do is choke the old dame.
No. Tell you I'll never look into a dying woman's eyes again. My wife gets into that trunk and kills herself.
You crazy fool. How will you make her get inside and close the lid?
You do not know the wife I married this time. She called me Puggy Wiggum. Likes to play childhood games.
Childhood games?
You don't know what I've gone through. Her favorite is hide and seek. I will play hide and seek for the last time tonight. And she will be sure to think that empty trunk a very fine place to hide. The lid is very finely balanced, and it is equipped with a snap lock.
Oh, wait a minute. Your Isabel may not be able to cram herself into this trunk. You and she are about the same size, Carlos. Let's see if you can fit in there.
You wouldn't let the lid fall on me, Vera.
Oh, don't be nuts. What would I gain by that?
Nothing. I have Isabel's money. I trust you and get in.
You are a trusting guy.
But hold the lid open.
I will.
Well, this trunk is kind of small for me.
I was afraid of that.
Wait. I move this way. Now I'm all inside. See? But I will have difficulty getting out. Hold tight the lid while I... The cat! Behind you, the great cat!
How did it get in here?
It's going to jump, Vera! Hold the lid!
It's going my ass in my face!
Don't let the lid go!
I didn't mean to. Carl, I didn't mean to. That cat! That cat!
Catch the door, Logan! Crash it!
Captain Logan, Casey.
Shoot the lock off that trunk, Logan.
And fast.
All right, I'll lift the lid.
Get away quick, Casey. That's gas.
The windows are open. It'll soon clear.
Not quick enough for Gervasos. I've seen a lot of dead guys, and our pal here is one of them.
You were listening outside.
We heard everything, Miss Lavelle. And I'm arresting you for the murder of Carlos Gavassos.
But I didn't kill him. That cat maybe knocked that lid full.
We don't see any cat here, Miss Lavelle. Maybe it jumped out one of those open windows, or maybe it never was here. Anyway, a jury won't swallow that story.
Miss Lavelle, we're going to be sure you pay for murder this time.
You and Logan never meant to railroad that Lavelle dame for the murder of Gervasas, huh, Casey?
Of course not, Oliver. We were just putting on pressure.
To make her tell what she and Carlos had done with the body of Jessica.
What had they done with it?
Carlos had buried it about 4 miles away from Greenwood Lake, where the cops had no reason to search for it.
Casey, you and Miss Williams didn't see the cat that made that trunk lid fall and kill a guy, huh?
No, we didn't see it.
It had gone out a window as we guess it came in.
Do you think it was really the gray kitten?
Could have been any cat.
Hmm? Ethelbert, we don't know.
According to that reincarnation idea, an animal might be born again as a human being.
Yes, Ethelbert, that's possible.
Very, very possible.
Yeah, it's very, very possible. Hey, what are you staring at me for?
Casey, crime photographer. On Tuned 2 yesterday, a CBS episode from February 6th, 1947, bringing to a close this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.